Rave Radio. Hey everybody, this is Johnny Mota with AV Insider, a show hosted on the Rave Radio Network on Rave Pubs, Rave Publications. I'm your host, as I previously mentioned. I have some special guests, and we just had Cedia in Texas, a state that I've never been to for laws unknown. Won't mention those, but I've never been there. Cedia is great. If you've never been there, Cedia is awesome. If you're in the resi market, it's pretty cool. It's a Custom Electronic Design Installation Association. Hopefully I said that correctly, because they're probably not going to like it if I didn't. You can check them out at Cedia.net if you're an installer. If you're a homeowner, it's Cedia.us. No, Cedia.org. Yeah, I said that one right. And as I previously mentioned, I have two guests, but before I have them on the show, as always, I'd like to thank my sponsors because they keep the cloud moving along here in Northern California where we just got some rain. Huzzah! That, more on that later. The sponsor, Ingram Micro, the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. If you head over to ingrammicro.com, you can check out some of my previous guests and what they have to offer over at ingrammicro.com. As I mentioned, I have two guests who were just at the show, Cedia. First of which is Alex Steed of the Knack Factory, and second, or vice versa, whatever order you would like to say them, James Banfield of Terra Speakers. Gentlemen, thank you for being on my show.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm excited. So, one, because I haven't talked to you guys in a while, and you guys are both cool. And two, is you were just both at Cedia, and I want to learn more. I'm under the impression, or I'm told, that you guys, as a company, had some products, maybe more than one, that were shown off there. And I'd like to learn more about that. And then maybe we can talk more about the show, what you guys saw, what you liked, what you didn't like.
Things cool. Like
that. So let's talk a little bit about Terra. You guys had some products to show, right?
Yes, indeed we did. Yep, indeed we did. We had two series. The first one was what we're calling the AC5 series, which is a brand new series, which we actually co-developed with Leon Speakers. So it has a certain flair with the Leon design.
Okay.
It's a modular type speaker. There's three different versions. One's a coaxial 5.25. The other is a 5.25 with a dedicated tweeter. And then the last is a woofer tweeter woofer setup. And all those are modular. So you can actually mix and match. So we can actually make them into any length outdoor soundbar that's needed as well.
Okay. So we repeat the lines again. It's the CM series. Is that correct?
It is the AC5 series.
Not even close. AC5. All right. AC5. CM, AC. They all have letters. They all mean something.
Things can meld together. That's not too hard to do, especially in this industry.
And these products currently are released, or did you just show them for something that's coming?
We just showed them. They will be released in December.
Okay.
We still have a couple little tiny things we got to adjust, but other than that, they were certainly show-worthy to show, if you will.
Okay.
And then sorry, Alex.
No, I was just gonna say I'm so excited about this line that I'm gonna commandeer this this explanation. That we have this monitor series called the Wall-In Monitor series.
Wall-In monitor.
So that can sound confusing. It's Wall-In, as in the name of the man who designed it is Dan Wall-In.
He is
a sound engineer in Hollywood, and had been in the industry for 50 years, starting with movies around Cool Hand Luke and engineering through the Mission Impossible series.
Very cool.
He's been nominated for a couple of Academy Awards, and he, about a decade and a half ago, started to become frustrated with the quality of monitors he had at his disposal, and he worked with Terra to get his hands on the drivers that we were creating, and developed this monitor series that he had specially made for his work and the work of his colleagues. And so he recently retired, I believe, entirely from sound engineering and film, and we're happy to be working with him to launch this series both on a commercial line and a residential line, these super high-end, beautiful, main-crafted monitors that come in 2- and 3-way models.
Now, we don't really need to get into full depth, but when you said drivers that Terra makes, because you guys make all your drivers, correct?
Indeed we
yes,
do.
Yes, we do.
And that is there in where again?
Brunswick, Maine.
Brunswick, Maine. Another place I've never been to because of laws. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. I don't get out much. Not because of laws, or maybe because of laws, but mainly because I'm broke and California's expensive.
Yeah, and 3,000 miles away.
Also that. If you guys want to learn more about all the nuts and bolts or like the basic understanding of Terra, and we can maybe get into a little more in depth, go back and listen to episode 39. It was my first interview with these two gentlemen and all their technology wisdom, or most of it on that episode. Go back to episode 39, listen to that, stop here, go back, and then continue listening to this. So maybe do two windows or however you view time. Yeah, so that's one thing I really enjoy, is that you're not just sourcing parts, you build it all and make it. And the other thing I like that you had mentioned, the wall in or in wall, or the very carefully worded series, that they're sourcing your parts to make that, correct?
Correct. Yep. He was buying drivers directly from us for actually about 15 years now. And about 12 years ago, he came up with this current iteration that he has. And he's been sort of, he took a couple of years to fine tune it. And then after that, he was selling it to other people in the music scoring industry in the Los Angeles area.
So, it's not only the drivers that are built here. The cabinets are developed at a millwork in Windham Inn. At the display at the show, we utilize transparent cables, which are based in Saco, Maine. These are pretty much from the bottom up, inside out, all developed here in state.
All more places I've never been to. I'm just going to write these down really quick. More places I've never been to. Maine. Yeah. Hey, correct me if I'm wrong, but, and I could be. I'm often wrong. Isn't Stephen King from that area?
Sure is.
Yeah, ever bumped into that guy?
Yeah, I actually have.
Wow, this interview just got way cooler. He's my favorite ever.
Alex will bump into anybody.
I ran into him at a sandwich shop.
Was it spooky?
No, it was really funny. No one recognized him,
but you did,
and I recognized him. And I told him, I stopped drinking a little over a year ago, and I said, you know, The Shining is a huge reason that I stopped drinking. And he said, yeah, funny, same here. he was a super super nice guy.
Yeah, you know, I think people thought I was weird for reading his books at a very young age. But honestly, it made my brain like think all these really cool creative thoughts, and yeah, I don't know, maybe I'm different. But my favorite book, or books, if you will, from his writings is going to be the Dark Tower series.
Oh, I haven't checked that out yet. I'm excited to do so.
It's cool. I mean, it's not his typical gore. I mean, it's sci-fi, if you will, right? It's not his typical writings, but I enjoyed it. That's just me. I mean, I do enjoy The Shining and all the other good stuff, and Cujo and Carrie and murderous type of writings, because I'm different, but whatever, that's just me.
Is anyone else hearing this crackle?
No, I'm not. It could be me.
Okay. I'm gonna reconnect my headphone.
Oh, I'm hearing crackle now. Are you eating cereal?
Yeah, I hear a little bit of it.
Fun fact, you can get all the Lucky Charms, just the charms from Lucky Charms cereal, on Amazon Prime. So go and write that down. That's dangerous. If you still drink, you'll most likely end up in 2 days getting all the charms from Lucky Charms at your disposal very quickly.
There were definitely a lot of times in my drinking career where if that were available to me immediately, I would have definitely gotten it.
Amazon Prime and the internet are a funny combo, especially if you're a drinker.
Yeah.
Yeah, so every couple of days, we'll get some weird stuff. I'm like, I didn't buy that, but that's interesting. I got a pound of just the charms from Lucky Charms. Okay.
How did this happen?
I don't know. That's the best part. It didn't happen to me. It happened to a friend of mine, and I thought that was interesting. I'm like, putting that in the book of weird things to note when I get older. I'm like, you can do these things. Now, as you mentioned, also, that was a joint effort. And I'm saying it wrong. It's not the CM or the AC or the CS words. Other words I'm not pronouncing correctly. But your joint venture with Leon Speakers, this kind of modular speaker setup, correct?
Yes. I think we just lost Alex.
Maybe. Alex, if you're not there, blink.
Oh, I'm here.
Oh, no. Did you blink? Blink once or yes.
Hello?
Okay, no, I can hear you. I'm just messing with you.
I'm here, but I'm hearing like insane crackling. And it's every time Johnny talks.
Oh, maybe it is me. I'm hearing a little crackling, but it's not bad.
It seems to be on that side of things from what I can gather.
I'm guessing it's here on the West Coast.
Okay.
Is it too much for you to continue?
No, I just, you're not picking it up? As long as you're not picking it up, I'm not worried about it.
No, but I'm sure on the recording, when you guys are hearing this, hopefully this is not all Crackle Master, because that's not going to go well. So we're going to continue, and hopefully this goes well.
Cool.
And hopefully it's already going well, I should say. Not for Alex, and I apologize. I'll have to, I don't know, maybe I'll Amazon Prime you some Lucky Charms. Just the charms, that'll make up for it. So this modular system that you and Leon did a joint venture on, maybe can you get into depth on how the two of you did it? Was it just a design thing that you both decided upon?
It is. Basically, I've been chatting with Noah for quite some time. They use our loudspeakers in their Boundary series, their outdoor speakers.
Okay.
So it's sort of the relationship started there, and then we sort of saw common goals and common theories of both companies sort of working towards. So we said, why don't we work on some other projects together? And this was the first of hopefully many different projects that we'll be working together with them. But it just sort of came about because we wanted to do an outsourced sound bar, but we were also due to update, or actually not even update, we were due to create a new series of loudspeakers for the outdoor purposes. So we have our current AC line, but we wanted to add some extra stuff with a smaller speaker. And one we can actually stake in the ground, which makes it look like a light that'll have a rain guard on it, so that way it covers that realm. And then the other two, I wanted to come up with something which was modular that can work in a soundbar sort of configuration. And by making it the way we did, it's easy to stretch and make pretty much any size we want, which is exactly what we're looking to do.
And that was primarily on the AC series, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it was the AC5 series, yep.
And this is more of an outdoor soundbar, kind of? Or is that incorrect to say?
Yep, no, that's 100% correct to say. It's an outdoor soundbar that there's two different models, or actually all three models we can configure to make any length of speaker you want, either by using different sizes or even by using a common or one grill going all the way across. So that way we can make whatever size speaker the TV monitor is. You know, we can also make a left and right on the side if we wanted to, so we could have the whole outdoor speaker being flanked by speakers if need be.
Okay, and so I'm guessing that you've gotten more requests for outdoor TV installs from your dealer base. Is that correct?
That is correct, yep.
Okay, and so that's the whole reasoning for doing a modular setup to accommodate large TV installs and such for an outdoor application.
Correct, and also the other advantage is there are some times where we've had requests to do outdoor sound arrays. So this way we can do a loudspeaker array outdoors and be completely 100% waterproof.
Okay, now let me ask you about this. Last time we spoke, we talked about your speakers standing the test of time. You also showed me a speaker, your speakers, buried in snow because you're in Maine. That happens. I don't really get that here. I guess that's why I'm confused. Are you getting a lot of install or outdoor install requests out there? I just would seem that I still get baffled by the, you know, a TV being outside and the speakers, especially with that kind of harsh weather.
Well, still, the significance for us, in outdoor installs is the fact that we were able to develop all weather speakers in extreme conditions. You know, sort of motivated by both being in a salty and a extremely cold location. But because we're able to make those speakers in locations like that, they appeal to places that are particularly hot, you know, sweaty, muggy, also salty and corrosive. So even when we're not getting those requests locally, we're still sending to locations where those requests are happening year round, both here in the States and in other countries.
Okay.
And we're increasingly, getting requests, you know, we long had sort of specialized in the residential market, but because of the all weather sort of extreme nature lifetime guarantee of these speakers, we've been finding more and more that they've been finding homes in hotels, hospitality, restaurants, anywhere where, you know, sort of outdoor higher end entertainment is being had. So yeah, we are increasingly getting requests for outdoor installs.
Okay, now do you have a dealer base or people out in Hawaii and things like that? Because I could see that being a huge request, being, you know, that on the coast, you know, with the lights or other things, stainless steel and copper is probably one of their two main metals that they're using out there. But in terms of your products, most of that, not all of it, it has kind of a plastic housing, is that correct, for the outdoor series?
Yes, it is. It's the same type of plastic they use in outdoor sea kayaks, so it's virtually indestructible.
I've never been in a sea kayak, but I kind of want to now. it sounds
you could
cool.
be in one that's also a speaker.
That's yes. what I was going with.
We could just surround you with a bunch of speakers and make you float that way.
Could we just make one of your speakers an outdoor sea kayak?
We could try.
Although I guess there's no such thing as an indoor sea kayak.
That's true.
Okay, well, we can make both. We just need one Terra sea kayak, please. That would be kind of sweet. Now, can we customize the color options? You know, I see the kind of a green or a white or a black being common because of the landscape look. But what if someone, and I know we talked about custom before, that's something that you offer if there's a need for it.
Yep.
But, you know, like I said, I deal with a lot of people in Hawaii, or I'm here on the coast out here. People really love their copper or a bronze look or something like that. Is that something, depending on the need or quantity, that you guys could accommodate?
Yeah, without a doubt. If when it comes to the plastic, what we can actually do is have it molded in that exact color.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that way if it gets scratched or nicked or anything like that, it doesn't show. And we can pretty much match any color. We've had numerous color requests, actually, as of recent. We've had a slew of custom color requests. It just adds a little bit of time. That's the major thing. And
yeah.
usually it's a minimum of about 14 to 20 speakers just because of the amount of plastic and that sort of stuff that they have to, our vendor has to tool up for, sort of thing. So
I gotcha.
That's the only limitation is that.
Yeah, it's the minimum order, basically.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah, it's custom. I get it. But not everyone I deal with understands how custom works. They want one piece, they want it yesterday, and they want to pay a fraction of what the normal price costs.
Yeah, it's funny how that works.
Yeah, it doesn't work that way, but it's funny how people think it might work.
Yes.
Yeah. And you don't have it on the shelf all ready to go? No, but I can get it for you. Now, we talked about two of those things. Now, were these the main two new pieces to show, or these are the new things that were shown by your company?
Yes, yep, that was the two main focuses for this, which actually took up a good portion of our booth, so it's probably good that we didn't add anything else this year.
That's probably good. I mean, I have to ask, what kind of music do you guys play?
At the booth or in general?
At the booth. Well, last time when I saw you guys at Infocom, I think Alex had his playlist going.
Yeah, he had his playlist going again.
So through the wall in speakers, we tried to sort of play stuff of a higher production caliber and quality. So we played a lot of Daft Punk and a lot of who else Death Cab for Cutie.
Yeah.
Okay. And then in the other display showing off the AC5s, you know, we played like a lot of, I think, like New Order and the Talking Heads and when we got feisty, we played The Refused and Metallica.
Wow, it's a good mix. Metallica, Death Cab for Cutie, and what was the other one you just said? Something kind of out of left field. Not out of left field, but
The Refused, I think.
Yeah, The Refused. There was one more.
Oh, New Order.
New Order. Yeah, so you had a really good mix all around. Now, has anyone told you, or you, James, Alex, or you, that your music speaker sounds better with this type of music, or just all around good driver supporting everything you listen to?
I think that the issue, not the issue, but like sort of what has long been a model for going to trade shows and showing off music is to show off music that sounds the most crisp and pristine and sort of is sort of masterfully recorded by fantastic musicians. And I think that is good and smart to an extent, but increasingly as you have installers walking by who are thinking, you know, they're thinking about their customers, but they're also sort of thinking about their customers as a proxy for themselves.
Sure.
And like they want to like hear speakers that can support the sort of music that they would enjoy listening to in sort of a party or social scene.
Right, so Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, the hits. Got it.
Precisely. Right. Oh, we also played a lot of Michael Jackson and Prince. I forgot about that.
Awesome.
So I think that it's helpful to play music that sort of resonates with people's daily experience and, you know, sort of puts them in the context of being outside and enjoying themselves rather than playing stuff that exclusively appeals to audiophiles.
I got you. At work, I like to play a lot of range of stuff. And when I worked in previous stuff before I was in AV, we had a mix, you know, the guys would listen to whether it was country or classic rock or alternative rock. And then in other parts of the shop that I used to work in, we had like AM radio only. And so I had all day was classical music, and that was some of the best stuff ever. So I got a good range of stuff, and I like to try and do a diverse mix of music just because you never know what someone's going to listen to. I do agree with you on the point that saying, you know, that in certain cases, you know, playing a higher quality music for those audiophile types is good, but at the end of the day, I think people, you want to play something that maybe that they can envision themselves listening to, right? So that's probably going to draw them in. And other times I like to do is I just, you know, I have whatever playing, maybe because I wanted to hear it in the showroom. But other times I'll just ask that person, hey, you know, what are you listening to in your car right now? Or what's on your playlist? What do you like to listen to? And I'll put that on because that's what they're going to be listening to at home. And that's how they're going to hear your speakers is what they're listening to.
Right. Well, and I think that like when you go to a trade show, you know, you hear a lot of. You hear like the same sort of most popular song of the year played on repeat over and over, like at different places. And it's, you know, like I know we'll like somewhat consistently play A Tribe Called Quest, and you'll see people who like walk by and haven't heard, you know, Tribe, for example, for a long time. And then they're like, just sort of into hearing it for the first time, you know, for in a while. And like, that's what ends up bringing people in.
I don't know if technically you're allowed to just call them Tribe. I think there's some sort of law that requires you to say the whole name.
I did, but you didn't have your headphones on.
No, I heard it. I heard it for the second time. You referred to them as just Tribe. I had to turn the lights on. It gets dark up here, man.
I was a roadie.
Well, there you go. Then you have that access. I don't think I could ever call them Tribe and have the street cred to be like, yeah, they're called Tribe. Well, that's great. Where do you guys see yourself, the company, going? I mean, adding new products all the time, I don't think maybe is the best solution for a manufacturer or maybe where everyone wants to be. I think there's always like, you know, these speakers or this range of product has really helped us to get where we are, and maybe we add a new product a year, but you've just added two, which is great. And I think that's actually a big push for some manufacturers. They don't really add anything over course of years.
Terra introduced the LS series in 2012 and has released sort of tweaks and augmentations to the lines yearly for the past couple of years. The AC5, outside of also being sort of a modular, sort of having the ability to be put together as a modular soundbar, is really also sort of speaker for speaker a revamp of the original AC outdoor lines.
Right.
And it's like a more angular and right angular representation of the more rounded original AC line, which is something that even outside of where it is modular, people and installers had been asking for, you know, for a more modern looking line, especially a more angular line to aid with installs sort of around the angles of houses, etc.
Sure.
For Wallen, I can't even, James will have to speak to how Wallen ended up happening as a product launch, because it is sort of out of left field, but it was sort of also too good of an opportunity to pass up.
Yeah, basically, it sort of, in many ways, like many things, just sort of fell in our lap because we've been making drivers for him for so long. He just wanted to retire and offered it to us to make it for him to sell to his current clients as well as anybody else or any of our current dealers. And since it was well-engineered and tuned to his ear, we figured, well, he's got an expert ear in the field out there. We might as well look into seeing what it takes to make these. And since we make a fair amount of other stuff anyway in-house, we just had to see what it would take to make that level of things, and it's fortunately not going to be that bad of a jump for us to do.
Interesting. So when I need custom stuff made, I'm just going to call you guys direct, right?
Yeah, that works.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I don't think my ear's going to be as tuned as Mr. Wallen, because I just like music in general, and it needs to sound good. Since your speakers already do that, I'll just order any speaker, I guess.
Yeah, that's the idea.
Right. Just order a custom, or any speaker. I'm like, eh, you know, just make it do something cool. Or a custom color, right? Copper all around. Have you guys ever done, aside the outdoor stuff in the plastic housing, have you done any all material housing, or not because of that kind of like all weather speaker to, you know, outstand snow and kind of the salty air and things like that?
We haven't really as of now, but we certainly have looked into different avenues to make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
Just more for the exercise of, hey, can we do this sort of thing? Because that's part of the things I like to do is hear a challenge and go, okay, what are the options if we get asked this? What kind of sort of things can we come up with to make this solution viable? So my mind's always constantly thinking of, well, if we need this material for this, or if this would work over there, or that sort of stuff. So I always love to hear from our dealers saying, well, what if we did it this way, or what if we needed it over here? So I'm always trying to figure out different avenues to make different things work.
Do you have a room for the mad scientist to kind of develop that stuff?
It ends up being the production floor, as Alex can attest. Often there's just different projects around that should be neatened more often than they are.
That sounds like a fun place to visit. I need to come out to Maine, I think, sometime and check you guys out and see the madness being created.
You would certainly enjoy it.
I think I would. Before we go any further, as always, I'd like to thank my sponsor, Ingram Micro. I mentioned in the beginning of the show, if you didn't hear what I said, go back and re-listen to all this stuff, and then I'll repeat it anyway. Ingram Micro, you head over to them at ingrammicro.com. They are the world's largest technology distributor, delivering flexible multi-channel supply chain solutions and more. Previous guests of my show are distributed there. I'm not going to give you their names because I'm going to force you to listen to all my shows, or maybe just one of them where I do mention that. And again, I won't tell you what episode that is. You'll just have to listen to one of them and find it, or head over to ingrammicro.com. You guys, what? Let's talk a little bit about Cydia.
Sure.
Alex, let's start with you. What are some of the things that maybe caught your eye when walking the show floor?
I feel like James and I have talked about this for the past maybe year, or and sort of marvel at this, is that my first trade show in this arena, I think, was Infocom in 2011.
Okay.
And I remember Infocom, and you sort of you saw something, I think, similar at Cydia afterward. At Infocom in 2011, I mean, like, the consumer drone representation was, like, no joke. A dude in a, like, folding table and, like, one drone, you know, like, he had, like, a small drone, and it was, like, probably, like, $6,000 for, like, a small consumer drone. And now just seeing that it is, that like there's a drone wing to these shows where, mm-hmm. you know, no pun intended, there are big like mesh enclosures where you can sort of see drone demonstrations and you can see a substantial representation in that area, especially for me where my business is in video production and content development, to see sort of how far that has come in 4 years. Is really incredible. And we didn't necessarily see much of this. I think there were sort of, you're seeing something similar with virtual reality now, is this like revival of like consumer virtual or the emergence of actual consumer virtual reality, where it was a novelty in the early 90s and it was going to be the future and then nothing ever happened with it. You saw one or two places where that was represented for home consumption at Cydia. And so my prediction is that in 4 years, similar to how drones became, you know, scaled in that way, we'll see a substantial representation of home virtual reality use, you know, say by 2020.
In 4 years, you can all put on your virtual reality headsets, and we can watch my show from the safety of your couch, and then you don't have to listen to it.
If my bandwidth opens up and I can turn on my one camera, we can do that.
You're a video production guy. How is that even possible?
Oh my god! Well, I could talk 4 hours about Maine's regressive approach to broadband access, but.
Maybe that'll be episode 2 of the show, right? Okay, before I ask James about what you sell, 2011, impressive. You saw at Infocom a drone, a guy with a table and a drone, and he was like, hey, check out the drone I got, right? I'm impressed that actually existed back in 2011 for something, you know, he was like, you know, hey, this is coming, and here we are today, like you said, no pun intended, there was a whole section or wing of drones, all netted in, and there it was. To me, I kind of feel, I see how it can kind of work in the industry, but I'm kind of like, really? Drones? Is it a gimmick? Is it going away? But you're telling me back in 2011, there was already someone there kind of pitching the idea.
Yeah, James, that was 2011 we went, right? Is that true?
I'm almost positive it was 2011, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I remember James telling me, he's like, yeah, if you go down there and you walk down that aisle, you take a left and you take a right, there's a guy with a drone. Like, it was a huge...
Wow.
A huge deal. And I don't know, I mean, I don't know what it means for... I don't actually necessarily, you know, it seems like it fits more at Infocom than it does at Cedia. I don't necessarily know what it does for the residential market outside of people who have some acreage and just want to have a little bit of fun, because there's still so many limitations on what you can do with drones in residential areas and so on, and sort of like what sort of clearances you potentially need with the FAA. But in my area of business, it's sort of getting to the point where if you don't, you will get solicited. In a year, we do maybe like 200 sort of individual video projects, and at least a strong couple of handfuls will require, you know, in a solicitation for a quote will require a drone to be a part of it, and you will miss that part of your business if you don't have sort of easy access to drone footage, especially since like 4K drone footage is relatively inexpensive. So like in an arena where you're doing work for real estate, or you're doing work for an event, or you're doing work where someone wants to show scale or show sort of borders or barriers, like not having a drone is sort of a liability at this point.
You know, what the scariest part to me though is that, and I'm not saying if you bought a drone you're an idiot, but any idiot with a credit card can buy a drone, and it just seems scary to me, because we talk, like you mentioned, you know, FAA regulations, airspace, that you are, that's an aircraft, right?
No, totally.
And there are laws.
Don't forget, though, that any idiot with a credit card can buy a gun.
Same thing, though, right? That was kind of the next point, is that, like, and this sounds dumb, right? But I watched some show where some guy got killed with, you know, in a murder show with a drone and a gun. But it doesn't seem too far-fetched to do something like that.
Oh, well, no, don't get me wrong. Like, my company is very heavily insured, very careful and very cautious. And we try to make sure everything goes right. But, you know, when I'm on a production and we're responsible for a drone in the air above people, like, I'm tense. You know, it's like, just even if you're covered to the teeth, it doesn't mean that something can't go wrong. And so that's, you're absolutely right. And it's in our commercial interest to do things right outside of just our moral interest. So like, people who don't even have that investment, you know, make me nervous.
Yes, again, any idiot with a gun or a credit card can buy a gun as well. And that's also another, I think, a whole nother show we could probably have. But
we've been having that show for 20 years, and it doesn't seem to be working out.
I don't know if it ever will, honestly. The only gun I'm allowed to own because of safety reasons is a squirt gun, and even that, I'd probably hurt myself. Oh, man. I was just telling somebody that I am highly accident prone, and I've been really, really good about not injuring myself recently, and then like that same night I fell up the stairs. You heard me correctly, I fell up the stairs.
That takes a talent.
It does. It's not a great one, but I have it. And then the next day I sliced my hand open on some aluminum, and yeah, it's not great. And it all goes downhill from there. Again, another show that won't bore you with today. James, what did you see that maybe was eye-catching or appealing to you at the show?
Trying to think. Most of the time, I spent a fair amount of time just in the booth just because we were fairly busy. But the downtimes, a lot of it seemed like it was the same continuation of a lot of stuff that's currently out there as far as more automation, more of that sort of realm of things. I'm trying to think of the new stuff that I did see. Most of it was sort of a takes off of current products that was already out there. In general, I didn't see anything overly different than what's currently out there from what I can think of.
Well, one thing that we had talked together about, James, and we talked with the guys at Leon about, is that it's whereas in years past, the evolution would be in hardware, and you could walk by and sort of see stuff like development of drones over the course of a couple of years. Increasingly, the developments that are happening at these shows are happening by way of software and what's happening behind the scenes and integration. And so it's, you know, it's sort of like less eye candy and sort of like big, beautiful evidence of evolution, and more just like how these systems work together, which is sort of interesting, but it's not as sexy, I guess, as seeing sort of like big new introductions.
Yeah, I will definitely say that it seems like Sonos and Halos and that sort of integration is definitely taking hold across the industry these days.
To simplify all that, I guess, it's just not really anything new, but maybe new adaptations of existing products that may have been around for a while.
Yeah, that's probably, and as Alex said, very software. Things are getting more and more driven just on the software side of things.
Okay, I gotcha. Now, did either one of you see anything that you thought that was just ridiculous or kind of dumb or not needed?
Well, I forget who published the piece, and I wish I had it on hand and I'll provide it for you afterward, but some publication wrote a blog entry about how, Jay Gatsby were an audiophile, CD would be his mecca. Like, it's just sort of a bunch of ridiculous high-end, like $50,000 to $60,000 pieces of hardware for the 1%. And like, you know, I'm at once marvel at all of this stuff and sort of jealous and get envy. And I get envy sort of stuff that's more like beautifully designed than anything else. Like, we work with the guys at Leon, but I'm also just like a huge admirer of the things that they produce. And like, I think that sort of what they produce is beautiful. And I think that, you know, the new Wallen series is beautifully architected, and that's the sort of stuff that I'm most interested in. But even, you know, even though we are essentially beneficiaries of other people's excess, it doesn't make it seem any less ridiculous when you see, you know, when you see home hardware and home toys that cost between like $40,000 and $50,000.
Right, and I guarantee those $40,000 and $50,000 hardware tools were easily haggled down, because I could easily buy a new Maserati for blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Right. People value, like, put value in things in the home. If we're just talking about residential, people put value in their home on different things, and for some things, whether that's a $1,000 recessed light, or, you know, a $10,000 toilet or whatever, you know, or a $40,000 piece of hardware in the audio industry, everyone values it differently. And then they kind of like go off of, you know, I'm not going to pay blah, 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 or X amount for this device or system or product because I can easily buy, you know, 100 of these or 5 of these. And it's funny to see where people, and everyone is different on this, where they value certain products in their home higher in rank in comparison to something else.
Oh, for sure. And it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I know that, you know, people in my family would look at some of the things that I buy and think that it's extraordinarily and insanely exorbitant. And then I look at things at the show that other people buy and think the same thing. I mean, it's entirely relative and sort of fascinating. But it's a nice, you know, I never pass up an opportunity to be judgmental of strangers.
I think that's why the airport was involved, or it was invented, so you can go sit down and people watch and say, that's interesting.
Indeed.
Yes, very, very much so, especially LaGuardia.
Another place I've not been to, let me just put that on my notes, places I need to visit.
LaGuardia Airport.
Exactly. Also, bring lots of sanitizer. Okay.
Yes.
Now, obviously, you both have Terra speakers at your homes. I'm guessing, I believe you both have told me yes, and it would make sense for you both to have them.
Yes.
How long have you had your speakers in your homes? Let's just do an outdoor system. I believe, Alex, you told me you have a pair that's been out there for a few years now, right?
Since I'd say it would have to be 2011, considering when that trade show happened.
Okay, and James, do you have an outdoor set of speakers in the same insulation? I mean, I'm assuming you're in Maine, so you're getting the same weather.
Yeah, very much the same weather. Those have been out there for 14 years now.
Okay, so a little bit longer than Alex's.
Yes.
And we're opening, so my company is opening a new studio.
In West Coast, California?
No, awesome. In Portland, Maine, right down the street from where we are now.
Okay.
And James doesn't know it yet, but we'll certainly be outfitting it with Terra's lines.
I didn't know this, but I assumed it, so.
Yeah.
that was a little, hey, buddy, thank you.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, the best place to bring this up is in public.
Right.
Radio show.
I think what you should have mentioned, though, were like custom speakers at the new location, right?
Well, they will have to be.
So they're going to have to be Knack Factory custom installed speakers. Yeah, gonna want
we can custom logo them, too.
Well, I think that there should be a speaker called the Steed or something like that, right? Specifically for Alex's office.
That's ripe with jokes in there.
Yeah. It'll be a 12-foot outdoor soundbar indoor.
I believe that's great. Where do you guys see the future for the company? What's next? I mean, is that something you can even share? Because I know you guys have ideas that are constantly going. You have a warehouse or factory full of them on a daily basis, to my knowledge.
We're playing with a couple of different things. Nothing I can really share now because we're not sure where or how it will lead to things. But
yeah.
There's a couple of different things that we're playing with on a few different takes that are, or different versions of things that are out there, as well as just expanding our current lines and trying to streamline things to make life easier for installers and all that sort of stuff.
And we historically have looked on sort of on getting the speakers out and distributing the speakers to a national international base, and we continue to do so. And we continue to grow distribution, and we continue to see the speakers installed in new places. But really interestingly, we're starting to find Mainers in northern New England knowing that we exist, because we used to just make the speakers and then get them out, and things being made in America was a huge deal to people in the States, and then their quality was a huge deal to people outside of the States. In Maine wasn't really a market for us. And increasingly, because people are more interested in buying things that are local and buying things that are crafted and buying things that are heirloom, we're finding a substantial market right here in the state. So that's been a fascinating and interesting turn, and something we're trying to pursue even more. And something we didn't say earlier is when the Pope was in Philly, the Pope was speaking through a good deal of our cam line of speakers.
Yeah.
Because we are awesome like Pope Francis.
Yeah, I was just going to say, James, I think you sent me some information on that. Now, how does something like that come to happen? How do you get your speakers in front of the Pope? How does that even present it to you?
Well, we were lucky enough that our installer that we've been working with now for 15 years, or integrated, I should say, more than anything installer, the cathedral or basilica actually approached them to change out their sound at that time, and since they conveniently use our speakers for all their installs, that was a mighty good get. Pretty much, if you go within the metro New York City area, there's a good chance you're going to hear our speakers because they've installed so many of them in that area. So because of that sort of name recognition, the area over there really wanted to upgrade the system, and these guys were the ones to go to.
Got it. I'm just putting a note here. Well connected with Jesus.
One second. Yes, that's okay. Basically exactly what it is.
Perfect.
I can't say that I necessarily am, but they are.
Also Yahweh. I think we're in some synagogues too.
Yes, we are.
I need to start come hang out with you guys more often. Now, but there was also, you sent me a couple links. One was the Pope, which is otherworldly, if you will. That's great. And I don't know of anyone else who have any sort of cool notes worthy causes or installs like this, right?
Connections
with the Pope. That, I mean, that itself is pretty sweet, right? I mean, who else gets to tout that their speakers have been used by the Pope?
Yeah, we were happy with that one.
That's pretty cool, because that just happened, what, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
Less than a month ago.
A month tops, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, what was that? In the Philly area or something like that?
Yep, it was in the Philadelphia Basilica that's there. I believe it was St. Peter and Paul Basilica.
And I'm thinking about it. I might have had a layover in Philly one time. I'm not sure if I need to put that on the list of places I haven't been, but does it really count if you had a layover there and it was like a roller coaster ride to get there?
I always wondered if that layovers count for having been.
It's the worst airport in the country.
Yeah, I don't remember. I'm going to say I haven't been there. just trying to think. Reasons to go would have been the Pope. Or to hear you guys' speakers, but I can just come to Maine for that. I'm going to put that on the list. Go to Terra.
Yeah,
let's talk about... I don't know. What do you guys want to talk about? You tell me. This is my show, but I feel like I talk too much. What do you guys want to talk about?
Alex, you're usually good for conversation.
He's saying you like to talk a lot, Alex.
No, he knows that's absolutely true.
You can talk as much as you like. You tell me what's new with you, what's new with the Knack Factory, what do you guys got going on?
Our company, fortunately, we're excited to be growing. We're opening a new space, like I said, that's going to be a studio, and hopefully at some irregular hours operate a bit as a gallery, and we're doing more and more work, which is great. While we were with Terra out in Dallas, which was an awesome city and a surprise to me because I am a northerner with a bias against Texas, we had one of my partners was in New York shooting a Gwen Stefani show, and then went to Vegas for a trade show with another of our clients, and then my other partner was in Arizona State doing a shoot with an Olympic swimmer. So things are exciting for us.
Things are up and up, eh?
And yeah, just speaking of Dallas, man, like Dallas was the greatest. I didn't think that would be the case. And I spent a couple evenings out just walking around and trying to find adventure, and I certainly did. Saw some metal and saw some folk and saw some riffraff, and the overall trip was great.
Yeah, I've heard some pretty good stuff about Texas. Some not so great stuff, but some good stuff. I know Austin has a cool startup scene. The previous Cedia CEO, my friend Utz Baldwin, has a startup there, and it's called, well, now it's called Get Plum or Plum. I can't remember. Startups always have the craziest names.
Yeah.
No offense. It's always this kind of, I don't know. I never know. I used to do a lot of work with startups, and I never know how the naming happens. It's always some sort of like play on words, and it's like, oh, you know, we dropped the E from the power. Now it's POWR for power or something.
There's
weird like
great,
that.
There's a great episode of the podcast Startup, which is a podcast about the startup that creates the podcast, about how startups get their names.
I kind of hurt my brain thinking about that.
that's a lot of startups in there.
Podcasts on podcast startups.
Are you familiar with this podcast Startup?
No, I've never heard that.
It's great. It's by this guy named Alex Bloomberg.
What is it called?
And it's called Startup. And he is starting a company called Gimlet Media, which eventually becomes this house for that produces a good deal of podcasts, but the podcast itself is about the process of creating Gimlet Media. And And there's a second season about another startup that is not his startup. It's about another company. But it sort of takes the year-long process of starting up a company and breaks it down into its various elements. And each episode focuses on those elements. And one of them is about naming and branding.
Interesting. I have to Google that on the internets.
I suggest it.
Yeah. I guess since we were talking about startups, and if we didn't already mention this back on episode 39... How did Terra Speakers start up? Where did this whole idea come from?
Well, as with many things, we started because it started in one place and we sort of went in a different direction. The company I used to work for closed and moved all their production overseas. So everything was done outside of the U.S. In that process, the customer we've been dealing with that does the House of Worship installs approached us and said, can you guys still make this stuff for us? Because we want to have this stuff locally sourced, or at least a lot more locally sourced than going overseas.
Right.
And we said, sure. So we actually legitimately started my business partner's Tugar garage, worked there for about 2 to 2.5 years or so. That started in 99.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've sort of moved to Brunswick after that and sort of kept expanding our space there. So every... I don't know, at this point in time, every 3 to 4 years, we take over a couple, little bit more space in the building, and eventually we'll probably end up taking over the whole building the way we're going.
And what you said that was 99?
Yeah, we started in 99.
Okay, so okay, 1-2 years ago. Okay. No, I'm just kidding.
In some ways, it feels like it was 2 years ago, and other times, it feels like it was 30 years ago.
And, I mean... When you get approached with something like that, and so you just had it, you said, yes, we can do it, right? Obviously, you had the resources.
Yep.
And then, again, all made there in Maine, so...
Yes.
You just had to... It was just that one request, or there was other requests?
It was just that main one request.
Uh-huh.
The old company we used to work for asked if because there was a little bit of lead time before they could move all production overseas, they said, can you guys still make some of the older products for us? So for about... 3 months, I would say, we were actually making some other stuff that we were making before. And then after the House of Worship thing for a couple of years took off, we decided we might as well make the outdoor speakers because we know these drivers are really good for that avenue. So we tooled up for that. And then right around that same time is when we moved to Brunswick because we needed substantially more space when we started getting in those cabinets and parts and all that sort of stuff.
I gotcha. Now, being that you both have your own companies, they both were startups at one point, and now they've grown and are growing, do you have either one of you, or maybe both, can give me or other startups or people just thinking about pursuing their dreams, hopes, maybe nightmares, I don't know, some advice? Can you give a little bit of advice for the next generation of people maybe heading your way?
Alex, why don't you take this one first?
Sure. Well, I've really had the luxury of working with clients or partners or friends or peers who just know more than I do, who've been in the business for longer than I have. So, I mean, even, you know, James can attest to the fact that on a regular basis, I'm asked, like, actually just yesterday, I asked a question about how to navigate a particular part of running our business.
Okay.
When we started my company, we started my company sort of modeling after another company that started a couple of years before us, and they are people who I look to for advice. So I'd say the first thing is just to surround yourself with people that you believe know what they're doing, who you can go to and ask for advice whenever need be.
Okay.
And then the other thing I was talking to with someone at Cedia is in the past handful of years, I've certainly noticed a marked difference of young people getting into the business and sort of starting their own companies or starting their own endeavors, be it sort of on the install or the product development end. And we were just sort of talking about how, you know, CD and Infocom, which are the shows that we sort of focus on, would certainly be helpful if they offered some very, very basic introductory business courses, just talking about things like bookkeeping and talking about things like accounting and talking about things like, the earlier you start employing people who know what they're doing with regard to those, you know, to those sort of more tedious parts of business, the better. Mm-hmm. So I would just, you know, I would just say, you know, acknowledge your weaknesses and ask for the help from and employ people who know what they're doing better than you do.
Okay. James, do you have any advice?
I would wholeheartedly agree with that. Plus, get a good lawyer, get a good accountant. Those are the sort of basic things, because no matter what, every year you got to rely on one of them for something.
Yeah.
And surround yourself with people who have either been through it or know the process as well. It's good to have a lot of passion, but at the same time, there are times where you need to be grounded and sort of go, okay, this is what the menial task is that needs to happen today, sort of thing. So it's a lot of different things, and I can certainly attest to this. You often have to wear lots of hats, so get used to being able to multitask as much as you possibly can.
Okay. One more question. It's being that you both just came back from CEDIA, the Custom Electronic Design Installation Association Expo in Texas, which surprisingly is great, according to Alex. Can you both give us, me or maybe some people who have never been, some advice? It's your first show. What should they see? What should they bring? What can they expect?
First, bring good walking shoes.
Okay. Check.
No matter what, you're going to be going. I mean, it's not like CES, which is unbelievably huge. But no matter what, walking on the show floor, you just get it can get inundating just because of all the stuff that's going on. Try to pay attention to the little stuff as you're walking around. Sort of go in with certain intentions, so you know what you're looking for and don't get sidetracked by stuff you're not necessarily needing. But always also keep your eyes open because it's custom for a reason. There's often times where within this next year you may need some other random thing that, hey, remember I saw that at CEDIA, or I saw this and I can use it in this particular application. Always think outside the box as much as possible.
Alex, any advice?
I would just echo what James says in the not in the logistics of actually pursuing the show, but like, since you sort of have the luxury of going to another town that you don't typically get to, like, bring good walking shoes.
Yeah.
And walk. And especially, like, most shows are downtown or in a business district, which are like literally the worst parts of any town. worst, most banal part of the town. Do a little research to find out what neighborhoods are worth visiting. Like, talk to the Uber driver. I talked to the woman who ran the shoeshine booth, who is from Dallas, to try to find out sort of where to check out. And also just like, don't, if you don't have to, you know, walk to your destination so you can sort of check out what's on the way. I talked to a lot of people at the show who are like, oh, Dallas is really lame and boring, but it also became clear that the only thing they did was stick within a quarter mile of their hotel, and yeah, that area was really lame and boring. So it's like an awesome luxury in our industry and areas that we get to go to cities that otherwise we probably would never go to. So, you know, certainly take advantage of that and check out the scene.
Sounds great. I said that was the last question, but I lied. Since you just mentioned CES, I'm assuming you'll most likely be there this coming January?
I'm hoping to go. I know I definitely will be going to ISC in Amsterdam.
Okay.
So that's more my main focus, mainly because of how big CES is. It's just gotten obscene, where I would go to walk the show floor, but there's so much stuff going on that I don't know whether it really would impact us specifically, where ISC definitely impacts us directly because our distributor is over there exhibiting.
Okay. I'll give you a little insider info, or AV insider info if you'd like. Or if you want, you can go back and listen to the episode prior to this one. I had the new current CEO of CEDIA on day 2 of his new job, where he reveals to me and the listeners of the world, or just you two listening currently, that he has intended to partner up a little bit with CES in hopes that there's a little CEDIA custom Electronic Design Installation Association network area with NCES, which I think is brilliant. I think it is, and actually
I did hear that they were going to be doing that. So, and in many ways it makes more sense because it brings the show back more to what it used to be years and years ago, where it was mostly just an audio show, and it really, mobile phones seem to have taken it over, sort of thing.
Mobile phones, e-cigarettes, all that good stuff. Watches. Yeah, right? Appliances.
Yes, anything.
I'm assuming drones will be there this coming year.
I would almost guarantee it.
I'll be impressed by drones when I get to the drone booth and there's a guy flying around on the drone. Then I'll stop and talk to that guy. No, that's great. By chance, would you happen to know your booth number, IC, or were we a little too early for that?
A little too early for that.
Okay. Well, I'll have to come back to you guys for that one, or maybe I'll just call in to ISC while you guys are there. We'll see how that goes.
Or just, I think it's a reason to visit.
It's the best reason to visit. Also, I've never been to Amsterdam, so putting that on the list of places
to visit.
Okay, Amsterdam. Check. Okay, well, I should mention you guys have some social accounts. If you are social like myself, you can check out the Knack Factory on the Twitter at, is it at Knack Factory?
Yes, at Knack Factory.
Okay, I was going to say the Knack Factory, but that's just wrong. At Knack Factory, if you want to check out Terra, it's at Terra Speakers. I think most of these are all the same, right? Facebook.com/ Terra Speakers / Knack Factory or Facebook.com/ Knack Factory for their respective businesses. Instagram exists because pictures are awesome. And you can find them there at Knack Factory and at Terra Speakers. Do either one of you have personal accounts? Alex, I know you do, but James, do you?
Not really, no.
Okay, but if we want to follow you in a less creepy way, we could probably just email you direct about products, correct?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, and can we share that information?
Yeah, it's jbanfield@terraspeakers.com.
And if people have questions for Alex at the Knack Factory, what's your email, Alex?
Alex@knack-factory.com.
Thank you very much. And if you guys want to tweet me complaints in 140 characters or less, or soon to be expanding, possibly, it's at jmota3. My personal email, which you're invited to complain or give me advice about my show, or if you want to be on the show, whatever, email me. It's at, or no, not at, I'm sorry, I'm thinking Twitter. It's Johnny, JohnnyMota, 3 at gmail.com, because I like Google, that's just the way it is. And yeah, jmota3, Instagram, Twitter, Google Plus, should that still exist soon? Probably just Johnny, or Johnny Mota, because that's my name. And that's kind of about it. Everyone, this has been AV Insider. You can catch us all on the next episode in the cloud.